Hi, everyone, and welcome to the live market update webinar. You should be able to see and hear me loud and clear. I've got a heck of a lot of things to get through, so I'm going to dive right into it. You might want to grab a cell phone with a camera so you can record some of the slides. Let me know that you can see and hear me. And as you know, what I ask, there you go, Alan Fink, straight off the bat, Newbury, Berkshire. Thank you. Barry, we've got NA from Suffolk, Paul, Sunny Pinner as well is covered out there. Let me know if anybody's balmy Hampshire. It's been a wonderful day, hasn't it? Nick, hello. I believe we've got a call next week. And Nick, don't forget, you're on the Great Investments Program. So this is more the public webinar, which you're more than welcome to, but the private update you'll get, the lengthy one, will be on your private Telegram channel later on. So let's kick off with this straight away and where we are on things. Well, the Dow closes more than 300 points higher Tuesday as the Fed rate decision looms. We're still waiting for those live updates from the Fed. Fed holds rates steady, but indicates three cuts coming sometime this year. I'm really surprised they're indicating that. We'll see what the markets do at the moment. You can keep me updated on that. But one thing which is important is when I get new clients, they're sort of like this. They're watching the market. Today I made £200. Yesterday I made £100. Oh no, today I lost £200. They're sort of watching it second by second. Given that they're holding things for 52 weeks, 365 days, 1/365th of a day is maybe a little bit too much looking at things a bit more closely than you actually need to. So what I suggest is consider the fact that I'm doing a webinar whilst the Fed is doing a rates announcement. Does it bother me? No. And we're talking about investing. We're not trading. If we were trading, we'd be trading that news. We're talking investing here. We asked people on LinkedIn, which companies would you want in your pension? If only these were the two choices. I'm also going to put a little poll up there as well. Hi, Nick. Hello. David, James. Good, Essex. Everybody saying Sunny, except Alejandro from Wokingham. But if any of you are here from outside, Auckland, New Zealand, Peter, hello, welcome. So this is what they said. We'll have a look at UK as well on this. And I often don't look at the UK. So I might show you some of the UK and why I don't tend to pick stocks from the UK. And I'll show you that on the chart, on the Excel in a second. As well, because what you'll then see is that there's just not enough companies. Well, first of all, there's not enough companies, and the ones that are there don't really hit my marker. In fact, I'll show you that now, since we're talking about it. Remember, I need all five to be green. So at the moment, you've got Sage. That's about it. I need value, growth, income, cash flow, momentum, Sortina, Alpha, and I'll come into these later on to be green. So out of 100, you've got that. Barely any BAE Systems. That's about it, where they're all green and Diploma. And that's from the FTSE 100. So you can see how they get crowded out when I'm looking through a database of 10,000 companies to narrow it down. They just get crowded out. And at the moment, if you were to look at those anyway, I suspect they're all overbought, even on a momentum basis. Certainly BAE Systems is, so I wouldn't even be looking into it. And here's a list of the ones when I look at all 10,000. And you can see the exchanges, NASDAQ, New York Stock Exchange, London Stock Exchange. These are European, which can go in your SIP and ISA. Again, none of these would fit because they're not green across there. They're not undervalued, high growth, dividend yielding, cash flow generating, momentum, Sortino Alpha. And you might say, well, wait a minute, Alpish, why don't you look for rubbish companies which might turn around, absolute dogs? So yeah, there's many strategies, but that's not the strategy I want to adopt for my pension. For my pension, I want the safety of due diligence where I've ticked the value box, the growth box, the income box. None of these are suitable. None of these are suitable because they're just too high risk. And by the way, out of interest, look at how few of them have actually even gone up in the last 6 months. None of these have. I mean, look at that. The average return of those, should you have accidentally picked any of those, you'd be down 29% in the last 6 months. So you can see why there are so many, which I'm not saying they're going to suddenly turn around. Who knows? They might. But I just don't want to risk it with those because they're overvalued. They're not growing. And so forth. But we'll come more into some of that. Now, Which is the number one problem you face with your IFA or fund manager? The number one problem that you face, Columbia in the UK for 20 years. Amazing. Ravi, sorry, I only bumped into him today. Which is the number one problem you face with your IFA wealth fund manager? They deliver poor returns, fees unreasonably high, poor ordinary advice, too many funds to choose from. And we'll go through some of this. That was on LinkedIn. We only had 45 people who voted on that one. 333 voted on this. This is interesting. The S&P 500. Now, this is, again, part of that point where people are overwatching their investments. I normally say to my students, look at your pension for 5 minutes every 2 weeks just to see if anything's fallen 10% from the high since you bought it, so you can sort of be on ready alert, as it were, regarding those. But beyond that, you don't need to be gazing at the markets every single second unless you want to. Usually, in my experience, gazing at the markets every single second is a bit like looking at Twitter. It's not going to be good for your mental health, okay? So despite average inter-year drops of 14.2%. In other words, the S&P 500, which is 500 largest American companies, and we could talk the same about the FTSE or any other major interest, despite on average it dropping 14.2% during the course of a year, okay, 14.2% from peak to trough on average, okay, the low point for the year, the annual returns were positive 33 out of 44 years. In other words, the market has a tendency of going as low as minus 16%. Actually, I don't think it's peak to trough. I think it's just absolute negative terms. It's not clear on there whether it's peak to trough or just absolute negative returns from January to December in those years. You could be down 16%, and yet you had a 13% return year from January to December. Okay, calendar year returns. Okay. Now, the point being, you look at that every single minute of the day, you're going to get a few heart attacks. And I just thought this data was quite interesting in that regard as well. Right. Don't forget, if you're on my great investments program, Nick, that includes you. I will soon put on Telegram my next dinner, which is Friday, 19th April. So leave the evening free. Okay. We did this one here. What we try and do is do great speakers in great locations. So that was in Parliament. And then we go for dinner. And there were 60 students with my compliments, 60 of my students on the program. Now, these are some of the problems we're going to address a little bit later on when I give the market update. Pension low returns, 41% mentioned that. That was in a different poll that we did. And these are the percentages. They could have more than one answer. That's why it doesn't add up to 100. IFA wealth manager clueless, don't know how to stack my IFA, etc. When I talk about the stocks today, remember, you could be in the Dow and you might also be in the S&P 500 and in the NASDAQ 100. Now, that sometimes confuses people that you can be in the Dow like Microsoft is and in the NASDAQ 100 like Microsoft is, because the Dow is an index. So is the S&P 500, and the NASDAQ is an exchange. Okay, so you can be in more than one index. The reason I wanted to mention that is sometimes people are confused about that fact, so I thought I'd mention it. The other thing I wanted to draw to your attention is this. A higher January and February, which we've had, could mean the bull market continues. S&P 500 performance went higher in January and February. Okay, this is why I said you might want to take a photo of some of this stuff. You might want to take a photo of some of this stuff. The S&P 500 index returns final 10 months of the year on average. I think, was it you, Ravi, who sent me this? I think you did. Thank you for that, because I hadn't seen this one. Is higher 92% of the time. So you can go to Ladbrokes with that one, can't you? And on average, well, 8.1%, roughly 8 to 9%, which for the rest of the year. And the next 12 months, which includes, so March to March, I assume, is what they mean, it's up 12% as a median, 9%. So not bad. So from the start of March, there doesn't mean history repeats itself. There's absolutely zero guarantee. But unless 1987 happens, we would be record-breaking if from 1st of March, which many of you joined the program on, to the end of February, we don't have an up year. We'd be record-breaking if that didn't happen, because it's since the Second World War, pretty much. It's rarely that that's not the case. The other thing I wanted to show, just in terms of data, before I get into the market, which is the next slide, which I really liked, and I mentioned this last week, but I just think it bears mentioning again, is the frequency of rolling two-year S&P 500 returns since 1950. The average positive return is 32%. The average positive return is 32%. Positive returns happen 88.5% of the time. Doesn't mean you're guaranteed that this year would be positive. I'm sometimes asked by people, can you guarantee me a return? No, I can't guarantee you a return. I can't even guarantee you we'll all be here tomorrow morning. Okay? I can't guarantee you the sun will rise tomorrow morning. It's just a theory. Worst return on the negative returns happens 11.5% of the time. The average negative return is 18%, and the worst return was minus 45. Now, you might say, well, that just means you just buy and hold forever and go to sleep since the Second World War, get a time machine, go back there. No, it doesn't. To me, that means if we can just mitigate some of this, if we can just avoid those years like 2022, how might we do that? And I'm going to show you exactly how we do it, and I'll share that with you, and how we ended up holding cash in 2022 without knowing that the year would be negative. In fact, I started the year thinking it was going to be a positive year. So I will come back and explain to you. And by the way, any exit strategy like that for negative years has to be objective. It has to be mathematical or incontrovertible. The reason is everything else is narrative. A narrative, as you know, if you go 5 minutes on social media, is always open to interpretation, and usually open to interpretation to reinforce your pre-existing views. Okay, so called confirmation bias, by the way, something I lectured about and have written about in 18 odd books that I've written on this, and I've lectured at Oxford University on it as a visiting fellow back there on behavioral finance. And this book is downloadable for free as well. So what happens with something like, and I'll explain later, something like those down years is that if we can, like this is S&P 500, if we can mitigate that even a little bit and miss a large chunk of it without trading our investments, as we were able to in 2022, and I'll explain how and why, in some kind of objective measure, something where you could say, oh, because for argument's sake, it dropped 10% from the high, and that's an exit. That's not the rule, but if it were, then you and I cannot disagree on numbers, okay? What's 10%? That's easy. That's, you know, something two people can agree on. But if it was based on, well, it just depends if Alpesh's gut feels good that week, well, obviously, that's not a good exit strategy. So what we always try and do with exit strategies is have them mathematical as opposed to open to interpretation. And that's the reason why what you can see on screen, because actually being able to just remove and reduce some of these is another way of improving your returns. You might say, well, wait a minute, you can't beat the index because for whatever reason, you can't cherry pick the best stocks out of the S&P 500. For argument's sake, you couldn't, let's say. Well, actually, the other way is just stepping aside of one or two of the rare bad years and making sure they're not the good years. And I'll explain that in a second. Now, let's get back onto the market because there's quite a bit I've done. Peter, I'll come back to your question on that one. So this is price to expected profits. In other words, you're paying $31 for every dollar of future expected profits from Microsoft. Who's doing the expecting? The banks, okay? The analysts at the banks. And Microsoft has a price to expected ratio of 31. That makes it expensive. Red is expensive. Okay, so what is an expensive? Well, communication services, energy, health. However, guess what's been performing the best? All the ones in the red, pretty much. So hang on, expensive companies are doing well. We want to do well. Does that mean we have to buy expensive companies? No, what it means is valuation is not the only measure of what moves stock prices, which we know. We know from the works of, and I've written about them in this book, which was published, 20 odd years ago. And it includes my Financial Times columns in there as well, which I wrote about those people and the work they did. Daniel Kahneman, Richard Thaler, and Eugene Famer all went on to win the Nobel Prize in Economics. And they stated and proved, Famer in particular proved that mathematically that, and you're going to think this is crazy, that actually picking from a larger gene pool and whittling it down tends to lead to better results than saying to somebody you could only pick from the FTSE 100, for instance. Mind-blowing, isn't it? They give you the Nobel Prize for that. No, he deserved it because he put the numbers to it. But also, well, if you ignore lots of important information, he discovered, then it's highly likely you're going to miss something important. Now, you might think, what? Yeah, so he said, don't just look at value, look at growth, income, all these factors affects stock prices. So make sure you tick the undervalued box, high growth box, dividend yielding box. Ta-da. They don't guarantee the market will go up. And sometimes you might pick one of those, get lucky like Momentum, and it goes up. But you ignored some very important factors and you happen to get lucky because you only looked at one thing as opposed to looking at everything. It's a lot better to look at every single piece of information and tick those boxes. Now, that should make sense to you just from a logic perspective, but it's incredible how many people buy funds or buy their IFAs, buy funds for them, which don't do that. They'll say, oh, well, you need a value fund, you need a growth fund, and each fund's got 50 stocks to 100. So they end up with about 1,000 stocks, 500 to 1,000 stocks. And then even if the fund managers were confident in, oh, NVIDIA's going to do well, well, they'll have 0.5% of their portfolio in NVIDIA. So if it doubles, they'll make 0.5% returns. Simple maths. Just ask your IFA, why is it that if the fund manager is so good, do they have so little money in so many companies? Why do they put so little money in so many companies if they're any good? Oh, well, you've got to diversify. Yeah, okay. So they're not good then, because any idiot can diversify, just buy an index. They obviously don't have the courage of their convictions, otherwise you're going to get no return because they spread the money so thin. I'm going to talk about all of these as we go on, all of what you can see here and how the market looks at the moment. So let's get into it. And remember what I said, my approach, and there are many different approaches. I'm not saying mine's the only approach you should take or you could take. I take one approach, keep life simple, value, growth, income. So value means the share price compared to the profits of the company. And as you saw, expensive companies sometimes do well. So, well, Alpesh, doesn't that, well, why did you have Microsoft then? Well, because the growth outweighed the value. And we put it all into a little algorithm. We give it a score. So we say, valuation, let's mark that, say, 5 out of 10 for Microsoft. Growth, 8 out of 10 Microsoft. How do you find out growth? Revenue growth, so sales growth. You find it from three places. The profit and loss account, the balance sheet, and the cash flow statement, okay? Revenue growth, sales growth, cash flow growth, right? So you can find that. We're not doing asset growth. So you actually don't need the balance sheet for that one. Valuation, price to earnings or price to book, for instance, which in which case you'd be looking at the balance sheet. Price to earnings, you'd be looking at the P&L statement. And you can pull all that data in, or dividend yields. And value is twice as important as growth, which is twice as important as dividends. Now, just stop and think for a minute. All companies have three sets of accounts: P&L, cash flow, balance sheet, right? They all, it's important, you would think, that the worth of something depends upon if it's going to give you cash, i.e. dividend yields. Not necessarily, and not guaranteed to make the stock price move, but we know from the data it's an important factor. Growth, revenue growth, growing companies should do better than ones which aren't. And valuation, if cheap companies should do better than expensive ones. Not guaranteed, there are exceptions, but if you mixed all three, surely your portfolio should do better. And if you get a tailwind, you do better. And I'll show you the results that we get from this. I can't guarantee the results, because in years like 2022, it was raining, we had to sit inside and stay in cash because there weren't enough companies. They hadn't been invented that ticked all those boxes. If somebody hasn't invented companies which meet all the criteria in a year like 2022, then we can't buy it. Crokey comes from Goldman Sachs Wealth Management. 30% per annum is the return of companies in the top quartile by cash return on capital invested. So we want that to be green. I'll show you the slides from Goldman's on that one. Momentum from the hedge fund industry. Sortino and Alpha also sort of from the hedge fund industry. We want the companies to have good high returns with low volatility or low risk of missing them. And Alpha is the ability to outperform the market. If the market goes up, you go up more. If it falls, you still go up more. That's what Alpha is. So why not pick a load of stocks which exhibit Alpha? Simple as that. Okay. Over the past week, what's done well? Well, look, Google. That was one of the most expensive ones. That's why we don't just look at valuation. And that's why IFAs and wealth managers are completely ignorant when it comes to, well, common sense. Why would you only look at one factor and ignore all the others and shove you in a bunch of funds where, well, if you're any good, why are you holding so many companies through a fund? And if it's low volatility you want because you want the diversification to give you low volatility, well, the lowest volatility comes from my 5% guaranteed return from my bank account. Thank you very much. Okay, so we'll come out of that. This is brilliant. I love it, Stephen. Out of 10,000 stocks, how many, what proportion journey qualifies good ones to hold? 50. And I can tell you that because I know there's 10,000 on the Excel spreadsheet, and I have a PowerPoint which I do for my clients every month. where we filter it. So we take the mass data and then I'll individually curate each one. And one of the final things I look at is momentum individually for each company, having ticked all the other boxes. And I know because a client was asking me, so how many slides are in there? And I said, oh, companies, ooh, about 50. And it was 50. So I happen to know that answer. Whereas normally I have to guess it. And it's like, I might say 100, 200. And it's not. I know last month it was 50, which is pretty typical. And of course, if you think about it, it would be that. Why would you not restrict your crowd? Let me put it this way. You're running a university. Let's call it the University of Oxford. And you've got 10,000 applicants and you've got 50 places. Why would you not tighten your criteria until you can only accept the best 50 based on whatever criteria you want for admission? You know, it might be published academic papers. It might not just be 3 A's or 4 A's or whatever. It might be extracurricular activities which show an interest in the subject. Have they done that? Have they published any academic papers? Have they done that? So you've got 10,000 to choose from. Now, if you could only choose British students, you'd have to widen the criteria to let in some, because you don't have enough. Some which just weren't good enough, okay? And they end up in your portfolio. And that's why I say I'm not racist with my stock picks. I don't just pick on nationality of country alone. It'll either be European, international companies listed in US, all of which can be my SIP or ISA, or British companies. So London Stock Exchange, New York Stock Exchange, NASDAQ. But foreign companies like Alibaba or Infosys are listed on the New York Stock Exchange anyway. Right, so that's where we go with momentum. And you can see actually tech took a bit of a hit. So what? It's been 1 week. Oh, but their sector rotation, it's been a week. Not enough evidence of any of that. And I'm bottom up. I look at the stocks. Companies are factories for making money. They're a collection of individuals who have CVs that they say, I want to manage your pension. That's what companies are. Factories for making money, CVs of people who want to manage your pension. Therefore, I look at those companies and how they're doing. I don't care what sector they're in. Just like Warren Buffett doesn't care if he buys See's Candy or Apple, as long as they're doing the numbers right. It just so happens he knows Apple's doing the numbers right. But if it was See's Candy, he'd have held on to that. I mean, he happens to have Coca-Cola and Apple. It's what is the company doing, not what the sector's doing, that matters most to me. And you might say, well, the sector is relevant. There is a correlation. Yeah, there's a lot of correlations. But we've got enough to get us our football team, okay, into my portfolio. Consider a football team of 20, and I have 20 in my portfolio. My 20 doesn't have to be the same as your 20 out of the 50. You might pick a different 20, and you might do better than me. It doesn't matter. As long as I am getting my returns that I want, I don't have to be right about every company. It's just that. It's like Liverpool. I don't know who's at the top of the Premiership, but let's assume for a second it's Liverpool. No, it's Arsenal. Arsenal, they don't have the best forward, the best defender, the best goalkeeper, but they're at the top. They don't. That's all that matters. I don't even bother if I'm at the top. I just want to make a return. ETFs I'll do separately. I'll as I've said before, I might do ETFs on countries like those. Maybe a crypto ETF video as well, if there's enough interest, or maybe thematic, sectoral, if there's interest, but that's separate. So where are we year to date? Well, the S&P is up 8.5%. Is there a standout sector currently of the 50? It's a very good question. No, there isn't. I guess, obviously, I would say tech, comms. I'll come to that sector thing in a second, but I've not looked at it that way. I look at the companies. I honestly couldn't care. There are some companies that in my portfolio, I still don't know what they do. I'll have held them for 12 months, and I'll look back, and I don't know what they do. There's a video on 2 days ago, Monday, I hosted an event, and I entered the building in the City of London, and it said Charles Rivers Associates. And I said, oh, I own Charles Rivers shares. Don't know what they do. Still haven't looked it up. I must look it up, what they do. Now, I'm making a very extreme point. There's the data and the numbers. I don't care what the company does. I care. Is the factory making me shed loads of money? Okay. Undervalued, high growth, dividend yields, cash flow, croaky, Sortino, Alpha, i.e. it's consistent in its returns, low downside risk, undervalued, growing with dividend yields. If there's a tailwind, I should do well. If there's a headwind, I won't. There's no guarantee. Let's get one thing straight. I'm not looking for guarantee of the future. I can't guarantee the future. And I'm not looking to forecast what's going to happen in the future, because that's too much like hard work. What I'm saying is, if there's a market tailwind, we'll do incredibly well, like a kite soaring. If it's a windy day, when we fly the kite, it'll soar. If it's not a windy day, it'll crash to Earth. Well, it'll go to zero. Okay. S&P 8.5% so far year to date. NASDAQ 7%. Dow 3%. I'm sort of, in a way, causing people to unlearn the bad practices that they've learned from journalists and things that they've read and rumors and all the rest of it. And there's about 18 odd books and 200 columns in the Financial Times whose job it's been that I've written, which is to sort of unteach them some of the bad stuff and instead tell them what's coming out of the Nobel Prize winning literature. So like I said, Richard Thaler, Daniel Kahneman, and Eugene Famer on that. So that's where we are on this. And so anyway, the S&P is up 8.5 times more than the UK market so far this year. All right, so that's the UK up 1%, S&P up 8.5 year to date. That's how it's gone. So let's look at some of those sectors. And you mentioned, are there any standout sectors? Well, yeah, I haven't looked individually for those companies, but I'm assuming they fall into these. Okay, communications, technology, as you might expect. I'll tell you the unusual. What you should ask me is, what are the unexpected ones? I guess I'm not surprised about financials, because I have said it before. Financials in a rising interest rate environment often do well, especially in a high inflation environment. High inflation because a lot of the debt that people have to pay gets higher pay rises, so they get less negative debt. They get less defaults. But wait a minute, a rising interest rate should mean more defaults. However, the inflation thing can often counter that, but more importantly, profit margins, it get fatter. And if you don't believe me, just go look at HSBC's last set of results. You can hide a lot of profiteering when interest rates are at 5% than you can when interest rates are 0.1%, basically. I mean, again, simple maths. Energy, does that surprise me? I guess it shouldn't, because again, high prices, war. Don't believe me? Go look at Shell and BP's profits most recently. You can hide a big fat amount of profit margin and profiteer a lot when prices of oil, when price of oil's closer to $100 than when it's closer to $5. Okay. And so that's where they are. But I don't look at those sectors. Humans have a tendency to buy narratives. There's an amazing chap on social media. Him and Warren Buffett are the only two people worth listening to be honest. The chap on social media is Rory something or other. He's the vice chairman of Ogilvy. Really bulky, fat bloke. The only one who's every single video I've ever watched, him and Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger for that matter, the only three people whose videos I've ever watched, every single video, every single statement, is pure gold and makes sense. And he, last night, I was going through it, and he said, and I couldn't believe this, he said, we've been following, it was an old video, he said, Richard Thaler just won the Nobel Prize in Economics. Most of you won't know about him because it's a field of behavioral economics. We've been following him in marketing. And I thought, we've been following him in investing. That's the standard. Now, he's deputy chairman of Ogilvy. And similarly, what he said is, in marketing, they sell narratives. I'm not here to market to you. So if I wanted to sell you a narrative and a story, I'd say to you, you know, extraordinary clever. I looked at these sectors, and these sectors are the ones for the future, and I'll tell you what's happening in energy, blah, 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 blah. What you should be asking me is, where's the freaking data, Alpesh, behind your narrative? And I'll tell you something else. If you really want to piss off people on social media, go onto Twitter, and every time somebody makes an outlandish comment, just say, do you have the data for that? Do you have the data for that? Do you have the data for that? And they'll just tell you to F off, because cognitive dissonance, people just can't accept it. I want the data. Where's the data for all of that? So I care about the companies. That's where I'll get the data. I'll get the data from the blasted companies. Are they undervalued? Are they growing? Cashflow and Sortino and Alpha. Sorry, I want to do a market update, but I'm doing more of an educational thing here at the moment, which wasn't the intention. Well, part of the intention. What about factors? Well, Momentum's doing incredibly well. It's at 8% up. Growth-related companies, so revenue growth and so on, Momentum, those have done incredibly well. Now, at the start of the year, I didn't know which horses would win. That's why we tick every box. We need a subset, okay? So we want companies which are in here, this subset. They tick lots of boxes, not just ones which happen to be Momentum, which could be those. No, they've got to be Momentum and undervalued and growth. Now, should that mean we win? Yeah, because it's already in Momentum, and Momentum was the winning horse. We just picked a subset of it, which is fine because we're still in Momentum. Do you see? That's how we end up winning. I didn't know Momentum was going to be the most important. That's how you end up winning in a horse race. You just tick every box. No, that doesn't mean you bought a bit of each of these. You bought something which coincided with value, growth, income, cash flow, Sortino. It's a pretty obvious approach. I mean, it's not rocket science, I don't think. It should make logic sense to you. Now, markets over the past 12 months, the NASDAQ's now up 44%. Is your pension up 44%? The S&P's up 32% over the past 1 year. Is your pension up 32%? The Dow is up 22%. And the UK market's up 14%. Shocking surprise. Doesn't usually happen. They're even ever up. They're up 7% since 1999, though, in absolute terms, not annually, just 7%, 7.8%. Top S&P 500 stocks, I don't intend to talk about these. Some of these will come up as we discuss. That's just out of interest. Okay, I'm just showing you that out of interest. What I did want to show you is this. This is an old column of mine in the Financial Times from 2004, 20 years ago. Oh, Lord. And it's this, right? Forget such magazine headlines as 10 stocks you must buy now. Market success has next to nothing to do with the stocks you pick. Basically, I go on to explain stocks you pick based on headlines like that. 10 stocks. It has everything to do with the numbers. So it's not the stock, it's just the numbers. And those numbers could have been from anywhere. And then money management and so on, which I'm going to touch upon as well. So all those flashy headlines, oh, you must buy this. I mean, it has nothing to do with the narrative, because narrative can be swung either way. It's journalists who need to fill numbers. Bottom 10 S&P 500 stocks, just out of interest, and we'll go through some of those. I think Tesla and Warner Brothers, I go through in this as well. And I'll just show you why, what is happening. FTSE 350, don't own any of these, but again, I'm just showing you out of interest. Feel free to take a picture if you wish. That's just pure momentum. That's the other reason I wanted to show you this. You'll get people who say, oh, Pesh, I'm not in dark trades. It's gone up 30%. So what should I do? Shall I buy it now? And there is a human tendency to want to trade and gamble. Humans, I've discovered, are naturally, most in my experience, and by that I mean 80% of the ones I've met, have a natural tendency, though they don't realize it, to gamble and take ridiculous amounts of risk. Maybe that's why we ended up on the moon. Okay, so what they do is they'll say, can I just buy last month's best performers? And then next month I'll do the same, and then I'll just keep trading. I'll say, yeah, that's fine. That's the strategy of yours. You've got a hypothesis and a strategy. Feel free to test it, but do it with your money, not mine. Okay, and that's the bottom ones. And that's how they've done. St. James's Place, nice to see that they've lost a third of their value. They're so good at managing other people's money that they've lost a third of their value of their own money. Genius. S&P 500. So now we get into the meat of it. Where are we? That's the monthly MACD. I still expect that to go up. Now, the warning I give you about this, and that's my projection from here. Okay, the warning I give you about this is on that upward move, look at this. You can get periods when the momentum falters, and you can have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks. thanks, Alan. You can have 5 weeks where the market just drops, and yet it's in an upward move. So bear that in mind, because this is where people sometimes panic when they get an air pocket. And how do we know not to panic during those periods? Well, the way I know, and I've said, I keep banging on about what I've written. It's because I'm so bloody old that I've had time to write all those books and write about this stuff, is that I'm looking at that, the monthly MACD. Okay, it's simple for that. And you might say, well, wait a minute, what value, growth, income, cash flow, and all the rest of it? No, I'm just trying to get a feel for where things are on the S&P. That's how I do it. I don't do it by, okay, I'm not going to do it by every single one of those headlines, because every single one of those headlines can be open to, well, let's take Ukraine, right? Ukraine, survival in danger. How many people agree? How many people disagree? Right? It's not a strategy or a game I want to play. I'm not saying it's impossible to work out what the truth is. It's just that's not my strategy, okay? Because it's too bloody complicated and difficult to work out narrative. Why not find an easier way? Not a way which guarantees things. If you're looking for guarantees in the markets, you're a fool. FTSE 100, flat. Well, it's pretty much, it's only a little bit higher than it was in 1999. The great thing about FTSE 100 is it makes you feel young, because you think to yourself, oh, it's hardly changed. I just remember it like in my childhood when I was in my 30s. Well, I was 29 when it was roughly at the same levels it is now. Young man. Now, NASDAQ 100, that's the direction it should go in. But again, please be warned that, look, and this is the monthly chart, you can have down months, two down months within that upward move, okay? One down month. So how do we know a down month is a down month and not a reversal? Well, I look at the monthly MACD. Is it guaranteed to work? No, nothing's guaranteed in life. So why do you look at it? Well, because I'm not looking for a guarantee. I'm just looking for something which is pretty good. And good enough is the closest we're going to get to greatness. Okay. Apple, as you know, I sold half of that holding and it's bounced up since then. I did say it might bounce up off this and it has. Why did I sell half? Well, because the MACD had fallen below its signal line and that's usually a reason for me to leave. Okay. If this is the first time, James said, is Berkshire Hathaway on the team sheet? Berkshire Hathaway's obviously out of the 10,000 stocks, it's in there, but I don't think it ticked all the boxes. I think in terms of momentum, it wasn't growing fast enough. And Warren Buffett will tell you that. You know, the man's a genius to be able to grow even at the rate he does with so many billions under management, but it's not good enough when you've got, when you're trying to get into a portfolio where you're also trying to compete with, let's say, for argument's sake, an Nvidia, for argument's sake. Okay, so it gives you an extreme example of what you're competing with. Sorry, old man, you're just a bit too slow. You're great. You did great in the past, all wonderful. But for my portfolio for the next 12 months, I'm sorry, that young man called Nvidia is just, boom, gone over there, or Supermicro, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah. That's the problem there. But you might say, well, that's fine. I like Warren. I want to hang out with Grandpa. And that's okay. I mean, the man is incredible to be in. I couldn't do what he did with the amount of money he's doing it with. I can do it with smaller sums and do better because I can pick more stocks. But he's got a narrow universe he can invest in of that. I'll show you his portfolio in a second anyway and what he owns at the moment and what Bill Gates owns at the moment. And you'll sort of see why it's not going to be one of the big growers. And he'd tell you that as well, because we'll just have a look at it, shall we? Now, Apple, yeah, so it's fallen there. So it's one which I hold the other 50%, but I wouldn't buy any at the moment, and I'm not selling any more at the moment, okay? And it's one of what I call my quality five, which are the three M's and the two M's and the three A's, Meta, Microsoft, Apple, Amazon, Alphabet, in the sense that they're ones which if I sell, I expect I'll buy back at some point, whereas I can't say that about any other stock. And this is one which I sold 50% of. I expect I'll buy it back at some point in the future because it'll come back on the approved filtered list. You know, it'll do this kind of thing again. But at the moment, sold half of it. Okay, so that's Apple. I'll come back to... Josh, I'll come back to yours in just a second. Alphabet, I'm just going to do for the Great Investment Trade on the private channel. So, Nick, that's what you'll get on the private channel and many more when I do the update tonight on the private Telegram channel. Microsoft, so again, it's a little bit overbought. Just be careful. It might be sort of doing this kind of thing. You might get a few weeks of a drop before it rises up again. So with this, it might go sideways before going up. I still continue holding it, though. I don't exit prematurely, so I continue holding. I'm not buying any more at the moment. But if somebody put a gun to my head, and actually, I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to say I'm holding what I've got, and I'm not selling any, and I'm not buying any at the moment. All right? Amazon is also on the program. Disney, nicely moving upwards. This is to give you the market sentiment. So we own this, okay, just so you know. And that's one projection. It's not necessarily the one which will work out because things don't move in straight lines. And that was bought before then anyway. But that's where we are with Disney. And it's really that it ticked the boxes, value, growth, income, cash flow. And momentum was good. In other words, the MACD was oversold, i.e. in the bottom quarter of the graph and rose and was rising. If it's flat, that's okay. If it's rising, that's good. If it's rising and crosses its own yellow moving average, which is that line, then that's even better. And that's what it had done. Plus value, growth, income, cash flow. People sometimes forget. They pick just one of those rules. They'll go, okay, it's undervalued, so I'll buy it. Yeah, what about the fact that it's absolutely not grown for 50 years? Well, it doesn't matter. It's undervalued. You know why it's undervalued? Nobody wants it. That's all right. It's undervalued. I only look at one thing. Okay, do you cross the road with your eyes closed as well and just listen for traffic? Do look at YouTube and you'll see why and how IFA should be probably locked up. Okay, NVIDIA. This is where we are with NVIDIA. Okay, and it's overbought. So why haven't you sold it? And why am I continuing to hold it far longer than I thought I would? And if you remember watching my broadcast when it was doing this, I actually thought it was going to drop there. So how come you didn't sell it? Well, simple rule. It hadn't dropped X percent. If it drops X percent, we'll sell Y percent. If it doesn't drop at all, what can I do? There was just nothing to sell. And it just kept going up and up. So if it drops X percent, then you sell Y percent. It just doesn't drop. What can I tell you? An X percent could be 10%, could be 15, could be 20, 25, and you can work out. If it 10, 15, 20, 25, how much do you want to sell? Now, that's scientific and objective because it's mathematical. So you can work that out yourself. This way, you don't have to try and guess on the market. So yeah, but Albert, if I get out, like say if it drops 10%, I sell 20% of it or 30 or 40 or 50 or whatever. What about getting back in? Well, that's a separate issue. It's a separate issue. Okay, and we'll talk about getting back in, which is value, growth, income, cash flow, Sortino Alpha. That's how you get back in. They're two different things. But you don't sell because you don't know when and how you're going to get back in. That's nuts. And the other mistake people make is they say, oh, look, I didn't need to sell here because, look, it came back to the same price later. It just took a long way around. Yeah, you know what the difference is? If you don't have any mechanism, even if you can remove half of that, let's say you sell a bit too late, you get back in. If you don't have any mechanism, and for us, has the monthly MACD fallen below its own moving average? That's the rule. If you don't have any mechanism, then actually, yes, you've made 0%. Whereas we could, as there, which was January 2023, when it was on our approved filtered list, and we got in, I didn't expect it to go up 250%. That's what that is. I wish I knew it was going to. I would have gone to Ladbrokes with it and only put all my money in that, but I didn't know that. We make 200 and, well, by then it had made, what, 100%? No, 200% by here. Anyway, whatever that is, 150%, you made zero. And people go, oh, no, but you should just buy and hold. It went back to the same number. Yeah, you don't understand simple maths. Zero is less than 150. Okay, and what's the objective way of measuring to get out? Well, for us, it's has the MACD, monthly MACD, crossed below its moving average? Then that's probably, like here, it's probably a pretty bloody good reason to get the hell out. And what's a good reason to get in? Well, if either the MACD is flat, like there, or preferably rising, or even better, above. Now, take Tesla. We had a special situation there where we got in, i.e. it didn't tick all the green boxes of value, growth, income. We got out in October because it had a fall. Okay, it had a fall. Once you get in, if the MACD is falling, too late. It's, you're in, and you're in for 12 months, or, as I said, if it drops 25% from the high it's been since you bought it. So very simple rules. Has it dropped X percent, 25%, then sell 100? But you might sell sooner if, for whatever reason, you're risk averse. But you might say, no, 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 my life's too short. I don't want to do all that. But then just have a simple rule. 25% from the high since you bought it, then get the hell out of there. Now, with this one, we'd got out there after that fall. And it actually kept going up. And I kept doing the broadcast, as I do every week, about this, so you can watch it. And I don't own it now. And I said, oh, well, looks like we were wrong. It keeps going up. Oh, well, never mind. Maybe it'll be a special situation again at some point. And it wasn't. It's fallen off. Now, did I know it was going to go up after we sold it? No, because then I would have held it. Did I know it was going to fall after that? No. Why did I get out? Well, because it just wasn't breaking out. And I needed to reduce here. It was just actually just falling below its moving average, even more so. So it was like, forget it. Meta is on the Great Investments Program. NXP is one we own, and it seems to be doing perfectly fine. Expect it to do that. And that's been one of the ones from, I think it was the start of the year, from the January list. So that's got to be held for 12 months anyway. Qualcomm, again, from January list. So this is just an update. It's one we own. And that, now, this is not a tip sheet, so I'm not going to tell you buy it now. Sorry, you should have bought it then. I'm not buying anymore now. I'm holding what I've got. This is not a tip sheet. It's to tell you where things are and give you some stocks we own, some we don't, give you an idea of what's happening in the broader market. More importantly, the S&P 500 and NASDAQ and stuff and what's happening. ServiceNow, well, we exited, so we need to get rid of that. I told her to get rid of that because we've exited that one anyway. Special situations are ones which, just to let you know, are ones which can still do very well over the 12-month period, but the value, growth, income, they don't tick all of those boxes. They don't necessarily tick every single one of those boxes. Value, growth, income, momentum. Netflix is not one I own. Why do I cover it? Well, because when it had its results here, I said, well, I'll cover this because it's very popular and it's good in terms of sentiment. It's done incredibly well. And somebody said to me on social media, you missed a good one there. Well, I guess so, but I can't buy everything. And it was just to show you there's lots that I cover which I don't own. And it's just gone in line with this. And this was one which I'm covering just because it's in the news. It's got nothing to do with, it didn't tick all our boxes anyway, I don't believe. So it's to show you that just because it's outside of what we would have bought doesn't mean it can't go up. Okay. And so that's just to tell you how things are doing. I don't own it, don't have plans to own it, and it's doing rather well. There's a few like that I'm going to show you. Parrish quite likes this. But anyway, I think that shows you the limits of the MACD look. And that's why it's not the only thing one would look at. You'd also look at value, growth, income, cash flow. So let that be a warning to you. Look, just flat. For those who think, oh, I found a secret source to knowing what the markets do. Don't forget on YouTube, you can see my views, and there's a million views on there. Now here's another one popular with hedge funds. I didn't buy it. I actually thought I'd be right, and that the hedge funds would be wrong. In fact, the hedge funds were right, and it's gone up. It's continued going up. I thought that I don't want this because it's overbought. Look, the MACD's too high, so I didn't get in. Okay, and still continued up. So again, to make the point, there might be other strategies which work. There might be ones we don't look at, which can go up. That's fine. I only care about my portfolio and make sure it does well enough. Again, a similar example for that. Now, this is one which I do like and don't have a problem with, because it's got more room to go up and hits our criteria. So it's one which is eligible. Now, here's another point I want to make. I can't buy every stock which hits my criteria of value, growth, income, cash flow, Sortina. And this was one. I can't put money into everything, otherwise I'll own too many stocks and too little money in each. I mean, technically I could, because I treat them all equally, all 50 of them, let's say, and hold them for 12 months. But this is one which is eligible and I like and could have been on our list, and it happens to be popular with hedge funds. I just didn't buy it, and it seems to be doing okay. Okay, oh, and by the way, I'm not the only one who likes it. JP Morgan, UBS, Barclays, they all like it as well. TikTok, there's now 300,000 followers, so don't forget that place as well. And on YouTube, you'll see the pensions and everything else. And on LinkedIn, have a look there as well. I'm going to answer some questions. What I would say is, if you'd like a tour of how we do all of this, tour of, most people want two things. They want the transparency of the data. This is updated monthly, but you hold for a month. Let me give you a quick tour, actually. And if you want a detailed one, Parrish can give you one. Okay. This protects us from downside falls. Hold for 12 months. Has it fallen 25% from the peak? Forget this risk averse thing. That's more as if the bits that I told you about, the MACD, and forget that part. Okay. So that's the most important part of it. Now, how did we stay in cash in 2020? Two. Well, and I'll give you an example, because Meta shows it really, really ridiculously well. So if you look at Meta, because, oh, how did you know? So I didn't know. I didn't know anything. What I knew then was that it was crossing. When the blue dotted line goes below that, I really usually don't want to be in the damn thing. Did I know it was going to drop 80%? No. Did I know it was going to wipe out 6 years of other people's pensions? No. Did I know Scottish Mortgage Investment Trust, which held this, would drop 50% in a year? No. Did I know IFAs and fund managers would be dragged all the way down? Well, yeah, work that out, because they're idiots, that they would be dragged all the way down because they can't sell it and hold cash. Okay. S&P 500 breaks 5,200 for the first time after the Fed keeps rate cut outlook. So what the Fed's done is really by saying we're going to cut rates three times this year, they're nuts. Now, I said, if you look on my LinkedIn, Ravi, you follow my LinkedIn closely, you'll know I said a few months ago, there's not going to be any cuts in March. Okay. And I guess part of my business is to know which way things are going to go. And that's why I was a bit more optimistic about the rises in the markets anyway. But to be honest, it could have fallen today and I would have said, well, I would have said exactly the same stuff I've said. I'm not panicked about what happens every day. That's good news for us. The S&P breaks 5,200 for the first time. It's gone up. If your pensions, go ask your IFA, why have you got so many funds? Why have the funds got so many stocks? How on earth can you get a good return if any one of those stocks does well, you've got so little money in them? Simple maths. Okay, and watch them say, well, if you can do so well, why don't you manage it yourself? Because literally, Ravi, that's what one of those idiotic IFAs said to you. Give me one more second. So with this, I didn't know it was going to drop that much. Why did we get back in January 2023? Well, it was on the approved filtered list and the MACD wasn't falling. Okay, it was all green on here. Okay, on here it was all green, these first five columns, and the MACD wasn't falling. It was as simple as that. That's why. And you might say, well, Arpesh, if you just held on, you would have got, it came back to where it was, so buy and hold works. No, that's a 0% return. We got a 250% return because we didn't have that bloody fall. And those people who say, oh, no, it's okay, I would have held it. No, it dropped 10%, then 20, then 30, then 40, then 50, then 60. That's the point your wife sent you the decree nisi for the divorce. 70, okay, 80%, your pension wiped out for 6 years. That's what your fund manager will do. Is it because they're idiots? No, it's because they're handcuffed. They can't. They want your fees. Can we agree that they want money off you? They want your fees, and they can't sell more than, they can't hold more than 5% cash. That's the only two reasons why. Okay, so anyway, email Parrish if you want a tour of how we do things differently. I've got a few more questions. Thoughts on WW Grainger? I don't want to go through a whole load of stocks. It's going to be blooming crazy if I do that. Yeah, it's going to be like this. I haven't got it up there. I don't know off the top of my head, because I you're not going to believe this, I don't memorize every single company, so I couldn't tell you off the top of my head. Let's have a look. It was one of the ones which I was it on the January list. Yeah, so look, there's the simple thought. It's overbought, so be careful. If it drops X, sell Y. So the same strategy as you'd have with Nvidia and Meta, which is you hold it. If it drops X, sell Y. Okay. Because the MACD is overbought. Now you might say, well, wait a minute, what about all of this drop here where it dropped there? Yeah, you might have got out prematurely based on your risk appetite. If you're risk loving, you would have held it until the MACD crosses the signal line. If you're risk averse, you would have sold it all if it dropped 10%. Are you risk averse or are you risk loving? If you're risk loving, you get to make more money because you would have waited for the MACD to fall below. If you're risk averse, you would have made less money because you would have taken your profits up to that point when it dropped 10% from the highs. Okay, simple. Are you risk averse or are you risk loving? Which are you? You might as well have a bit of both. Well, fine. Sell half if it drops 10% from the highs and sell the other half if the MACD crosses the signal line. There you go. Simple maths. All right, very simple. And something objectively you could easily agree to. How do I get the MACD set up? Mine looks different, even when we're talking about on daily time frame. Well, that's because you're looking at a daily time frame. I'm looking at monthly. So that's the answer. I'm looking at monthly. I'm not looking at daily. I'd have a heart attack if I was investing based on daily. Okay. Now, bias question. Is the Dow going to be up by the end of the year? Let's see. I thought NXP was from March. It might be from March. I don't know, Mitesh. It might have been earlier. I can't remember. Thanks. Sorry. I meant Adobe, MACD cross monthly is the rule to sell in this case. Well, let's have a look at Adobe then. Adobe had high hopes for because of the... Right, let's have a look at Adobe. Okay, so there we go. That's Adobe. No, it hasn't. I'll do that on the private client anyway this evening. It hasn't fallen below its signal line at all. So there's no action needed. It's not been 12 months. It's not fallen below its signal line. So that's that one. Let's see, what else have I got? Peter asked earlier, what date range is best to use? I just use the default and the monthly chart. I use the monthly chart. How do I get them? Daily, monthly, destroying SJP. I think that's everything. Okay, guys, in that case, I'll run through very quickly the usual slides I give. So let me run through those whilst you come up with other questions. We've had some great client reviews. Have a look at ArpeshPatelReviews.com if you want to see people using the data that we provide and the knowledge that we provide with it. What I tend to do for the first for the first 250 people who are on the program is they have me for life and they only pay once. That's it, for access, for lifetime access to the data. Somebody asked me today, what happens if you drop under a bus? And I said, well, like any other sensible company, we have somebody else who can keep sending you the data and let you know how to do things, but you'd have learned how to do it before I fall under the bus, unless you join and the very next second I draw under rust, but then they can still give you the videos from the last client, for instance, so you wouldn't have a problem. You know, nobody asks what happens if Bill Gates goes under a bus, but it's not just me. It's because I'm not doing the interpretation. Think about it. The numbers are there. You've got the flow chart, so you wouldn't actually need me. That's your IFA. Brace, I'll just quickly go through this. Most people don't know how to sack them. I mean, think about it. NASDAQ was up 55% last year. I was speaking to a lady earlier, yesterday, and she'd got 3% in 10 years. 3% in total, not per annum, from her IFA. These wealth management companies are setting up all over the shop and they're bloody useless. IFA giving 0% room when NASDAQ was up 55%. Too scared to sack the IFA. And that's basically the problem. We in 2023 did incredibly well, and in 2021, in 2022 we had to hold cash. So just assume a bit over 0%. Why can you get a good year? You can only get a good year, and I've said this in previous broadcasts, if the market has a tailwind like those years. Okay, and it's been having a few. Can I guarantee future tailwinds? No. Can I guarantee AI will continue producing great results? Can I guarantee the S&P 500 will keep rising, or the NASDAQ, or whatever else? Nope, can't guarantee anything. Can I guarantee Putin won't end the world tomorrow, or Trump won't nuke us all? No, I can't guarantee that. All right, just so in case you think I got a time machine. Hi, Sortino. That means high average return versus low risk of missing it. That's all the Sortino is. You can Google it. It's very important. High alpha. Alpha is very important. You want fund managers with alpha, so pick stocks which have got alpha, and then you're a fund manager with alpha. It's simple. If the market goes up, yours goes up more. If the market falls, yours still goes up more. That's called alpha. Some stocks have it. Copy those. Just buy those. Okay. USA has got enough. Yeah, that's where I get it from. If you can go to cash in a badge like 22, this is my SIP and ISA, by the way, on my son's junior ISA. My son's junior ISA, I should say, has 2x leverage ETF on Microsoft, Amazon, Alphabet. Still, he's still got those. Okay, just so you know, what's in his junior ISA? He's 6 years old, so he hasn't got tons of money in there. He's got the maximum allowance since he was born. And currently what's in there is 2x leverage Microsoft to Amazon, Alphabet. Right? That's how I take extra risk with somebody who's young. If good years make up for bad, Croaky is really important. That's from Goldman Sachs Wealth Management. And what they found is companies in the top 25% of all companies by cash return on capital invested deliver 30% per annum. If hold for 12 months, then reevaluate. If sell anything which drops more than 25%. Okay, so it's 12-month holding period. If it drops 25%, you sell. That's the only basis on which you're going to get those kind of returns. The major problem most people have is, like this lady had with Legal & General, between 2012 and 2022, they gave her a 20% return in total over those 10 years. And the reason that's piss poor is this, and this is what's happening with people's pensions, right? The NASDAQ in the same period would have given you a 382% return. The S&P would have given you 166% return. So you would have had 100,000 turn into 266. Even just tracking the UK would have given you £24,000 extra over 10 years, which is piss poor. That's the one you want, that you would accept. And that's not even cherry picking stocks. Like I've said, that's just tracking an index. So she's getting screwed on two ways. One is she's paying fees. Secondly, she's not even getting an index track return. It's really poor and pathetic. Okay, so how did we do? Well, last year for this, which was probably a year we will never have again, just take that as an assumption, the market was up 25% on the S&P 500. Like I said, we pick US, but we do have UK, US, and all the other, UK, European stocks on there, which can go into a SIP and ISA. It's just that I, from my first column in the FT in 1999, said I only buy US ones. And these were the stocks from January of last year, which were from the further filtered, which is the PowerPoint I talked to you about. The momentum was rising. The quality five, the 2Ms and the 3As I talked about, and any other special situations from January. Okay, so it doesn't include leverage. It doesn't include overweight holdings. It pretends they were all equal, only because some of the overweight ones were the ones which did incredibly well. So we've toned down what our results were. It wasn't a typical year. Might never get it again. 2022, for instance, assume we got 0%, okay, because it was having to hold cash for most of the year. So what happened? That happened last year. Now, sometimes people go, hang on, if you're using the same approach to pick all of these, how come one's down 1% and the other one's up 285? And anyway, if you remove all your good ones, you don't get that return. So yeah, absolutely, you're right. If you remove all of these, then all you're left with is that. Yeah, if you remove all the good ones equally, why don't you remove the bad ones? I wish we could. But that was the return. That's exceptional, might never happen again. There was a massive tailwind. The NASDAQ was up 55%. The S&P was up 25%. It's probably going to do that this year. Don't hold me to that. So we might repeat this for all. By the way, I keep saying on every broadcast, we'll never get a year like last year. That's partly me toying with the gods so that this time next year I can say, God, I said it, we'll never get it again. And bloody hell, the pension's gone up 80% yet again. How did that happen? Okay, so it's really just tempting fate. This was a letter we drafted for somebody who needed to sack their IFA wealth manager and do it themselves. It's very easy to open a SIP or ISA. People sometimes say, I don't know what to do. You go online. It could be Barclays. It could be Hargreaves Lansdown, AJ Bell, Interactive Investor. Doesn't matter. You go online. You fill in your details with whichever one you want. You either put money in it or you transfer your old pensions to them and they just walk you through it. This is from Free Trade, for instance, or there's Barclays, or there's Interactive, or there's AJ Bell, or there's Hargreaves Lansdown. There's loads of them. And buying a stock is easy. Buy £500, place deal. Simple as that. Okay. Just be careful not to pick investment trusts, because this is what they end up doing. For years, they'll go up like Scottish Mortgage, and then when the market bottoms, boom, down 50%, and that's it. You're screwed. Okay? You're screwed. They've screwed you. They've taken 6 years of your pension off you. They've lost half your pension. God forbid you had that in your pension the year before you're retiring and you've lost half your pension. The things for me is got to tick the value box, the growth box, the income, and so on. I'm going to get going because it's been an hour and I'm trying to keep these to under an hour. 10,000 stocks, 12 months, 15 to 40 stocks. Generally, 20 is a good number. And if it dropped 25% from the peak, that's another way of exiting. It's a bit simpler. Okay. 20, you could have as many as 40, but you've just given yourself more work. Try not to have less than 15, because then you've got too much company specific risk. And I put equal amounts of money in each. If over 10 years you were to get 20%, you saw already what the market does. And if you had 100K and you added a bit of money into each one, then over 10 years you'd have a million. So 100 becomes a million over 10 years. And the biggest, easiest way to do that is not to increase your total contributions. It's to try and up that. And you're not going to up that with the FTSE and the UK stocks when in the last 24 years, they've only gone up 7% in total. Okay, if you suddenly think the market's about to change and become the Silicon Valley of the world, I'm sorry, it's not. You don't have enough choice to begin with anyway. Okay, so I've written about these things. Pension caps may come back. Yeah, I mean, pension caps could be a problem. Then what's the point of trying to drive your pension above 1.2? Yeah, that's fine. There are things outside your pension you might want to make. You just might like making money. If you don't like making money and all you want to do is get your pension to 1.2 million and you've already got there, then fine, don't. I'm just talking about how to make money. It might be in a SIP, an ISA. They're tax-free as well. And by the way, when you up your ISA and your wife's ISA and your children's ISA, that's 60 grand a year if you've got one child and one wife. So that's 60K a year, and those can be added up. Or you could just have a general investment account and say, right, you know what, I'll just sell some of this when the time comes. And yes, I will take a hit on the tax, unfortunately. But you're right. If you don't want to pay any tax at all, and you've used up all your tax-free allowances, then you shouldn't make any money. The best way not to pay tax is not to make money. If you've got no tax-free vehicles like a SIP or ISA left. That was me 2004, 2017. That idiot who I trounced back then was given 9.2 billion in 2004. From 2004 to 2017, he was given 9 billion, even though basically, if I'd come 14th in that and just narrowly beat the cat, and it was a competition in the Financial Times over a 12-month period, I would have got 9.2 billion. Now, listen up, kids. This is really important. Don't come top. Come 14th. That's the secret number. That's when you'll be given the billions. Okay? And be really good at marketing and have a chiseled jaw and speak to Hargreaves Lansdown to market the crap out of your crap, actually. I said I'd show you Warren Buffett's portfolio. That's that one. You'll notice that after his eighth holding, he's got less than 3% of his money in it. Similarly with Bill Gates, after his eighth holding, he's got less than 2% of his money in it. That's really important. Can I invest the FTSE on NASDAQ, or is it not worth it? You can. It's an index tracker. You can track the index. What platform do you use to junior ISA to access 2x leverage on stocks? Hargreaves Lansdown. Aaron, pension cats, mate. Nope. Ravi, I joined the Great Investment Program 4 years ago. And so, oh, thank you, Ravi. Thank you. Has it been 4 years already? Seriously, has it been 4 years? I can't believe it. I'm going to broadcast that to everyone, Ravi. Tej Pal, are there any good VCTs? Not my speciality, I'm afraid. Your mention proves that you look at fair value of a stock. What method did you use? Graham's DCF? No. Middash, I think... No, that's, I don't know, you're confused. How do I get the MACD set up? Oh, I've answered this. Okay, that's everything then. That's the Goldman Sachs Wealth Management slide that I stole from their R&D department, Goldman Sachs Research department. That's their quantum database. And what they discovered is companies in the top quartile by cash return on capital invested generated 30% per annum returns. Not every year and not every company in the basket, because look, in 2008, financial crisis, none of them did. 30%. So that's why I ticked that box. Get it? I ticked that box, and that's on my data for that reason. I've told you about that already, that you don't need to know. This is a typical portfolio. So when we analyze their portfolios, we find that they've got too many funds, which are too rubbish, and they've got companies which have just got way too many holes in them. And then, you know, we're not surprised that their returns are just piss poor. Whoops. Look at that. That is just 6 month performance was that poor. That's an old example I'm giving. That's another one with thousands of companies, scattergun effect. I get so many people complaining about their IFAs. Put it in your chat box. Who's your IFA? Tell me your favorite IFA that you don't like. I mean, you know, just let me know who you want me to talk about, who are rubbish. This is what we do. Speak to Parish if you want to get a tour of all of this. Parish at tradermind.com. She used to work for me. Now she's a fund manager. Basically, you can teach anybody to manage capital. It is not rocket science. Data, 12-month holding, 20 stocks, 25% drop. Value, growth, income, Croaky, Sortino, Alpha. If you're not doing all of that, then you got a problem. That's when I sort of developed all of this. And that's what's important. The others don't do all of this. So when I started creating all of this out of, I mean, I created the asset management company in 2004, but that's a separate thing. This was one of the things that I developed alongside it and never thought about creating a program out of it and getting people to have access to it. Now I want to get venture capital investment into it, make it global. We've got about 230 people on the program, and you can see what people say about my work generally. When we get to, I think, 250, and the first 250 will always have me as the mentor. After that, there'll be other people, and there'll be a different charging mechanism. They'll probably pay subscription fees and all the rest of it. But for the moment, people just pay a one-off for me to be on the program. And when they're on the webinar, it's a 40% off just for the webinar people, and just limited to 10 for any who want to come on. And basically the benefit is, we looked at, well, what if you got a 15% uplift on a 100K portfolio, and it's yours for life, one-off payment, yours for life, access to me for life. For the first 250 people, and we're below that number at the moment, we're about 230-ish, I think. And we sometimes have husbands and wives or parents and children. 15% uplift, well, that's 150, that's 15K in 1 year they've already made. Anyway, most people just want access to the data, and they want access to me. That's it. Once they've learned from me, they don't even need to speak to me. They can, but they often don't. Then they just take the data and run with it. 100K is a 20% return on a 500K SIP and ISA. As one person put it, it's a no bloody brainer. If you've got 500K, more capital, you've got more of a no brainer it is, because a small move in the needle gives you a big return. That's where you can go if you'd like to join. And there is that for people, the discount. That's the coupon code. That's what the program is. And it does all of this. The problem is, and the reason I want to do this, I want to replace St. James's Place on the FTSE 100. They've got 900,000 clients. I want to replace them. I want all their 900,000 clients. Won't get them all. And want to replace them. But unlike them, we won't hold the assets. Just like Uber doesn't own cars and Airbnb doesn't own flats, we'll be providing the data and the know-how. So you manage it with whichever broker you have. So it's an asset management company without assets is what I want. Anyway, so that's where we are with that. DIY is the other approach, which you're the closest. IFAs are the worst. They don't tick any box, I'm afraid. Mithesh, my question is, Chris said that you look at stocks that are at least 40% undervalued. Which method of value? Oh, that was discount cash flow. No, that was just a tiebreaker. If Mithesh, there's two stocks and they're both on the greens, they tick everything the same, they look identical, then a tiebreaker could be, could be anything which is irrelevant. So could be which sector they're in, could be what I like the news of. Those aren't relevant facts, but I need a tiebreaker or pick one. It was discount cash flow, Mithesh. Liam, can I? Oh, he's onto that. So that's what you do. 87% of you think the Dow is going to be higher this year. So I hope your pensions are going to be a lot higher as well. And I'd be more than happy to welcome anybody else who wants to join. Thank you, Ravi. Indeed. We also do events now, and like I said, we do speaking events 4 times a year for the Great Investments Program people to meet up as well. Thank you all for being on here. You've had some great questions. I love that. For those on the program, Don't forget, you'll get the very detailed stock market update this evening from me a little bit later on from my desk on the private Telegram channel, and it'll show you. I've got about 107 slides again to take you through with a whole bunch of stocks in the market and all the rest of it. So that's where we are. And well, you guys must be lucky for me, because as I say, the FTSE's down, but the S&P's at a record high. Well, there's a bloody surprise. Okay, so well done for those who are on the program. Today's been a good day, but please don't judge anything by a day. Like I've said throughout this, don't judge it by a day. Alphabet, Amazon, Apple, and Netflix were up more than 1%. Tesla rose, but we're not in it. Not got any plans to be in it as well. That's that. Okay, very simple process, time saving, and all the rest of it. So thank you all very much. I'm going to check it. Have you ever looked at secondaries market private companies? Yeah, we have a private equity fund, and we did think about selling some of our private investments through the secondaries market, but my partners take care of it. They run it basically on a day-to-day basis. And one's in Switzerland, the other one's in Germany, so it's not a particular area. My life is very simple. I look at the bits that I know about. I don't actually stray outside. I'll give you a classic example. On Twitter, I posted how one of the worst performing coins is Ripple. I own Ripple, so don't ask me about cryptocurrencies, because people keep asking me, and I say, well, let me tell you a classic bad one. I happen to have Ethereum, which I think has done better, but I don't think it's offset my Ripple costs. So I'm not your crypto person. I'm not your crypto bro, as it were. And similarly, secondaries is not me. As John Maynard Keynes once said, if experts would more often say when they don't know something, the world would be a better place. And I don't know enough about cryptocurrencies or about wine. I'm teetotal, so I really couldn't tell you, other than a 1971 Chateau Lafite, Rothschild Chateau Lafite is a rather good vintage, because I was born that year, and it's something that I did learn, but that's all I know. Okay, so I'll tell you when I don't know something. The bits that I know are my bits. I stay in my lane, as it were. Everything outside of that, I can give you an intelligent conversation, obviously, about anything, but it's not, not necessarily the... it's not necessarily my area of expertise sometimes. Thank you all very much. I'm going to go now. Thank you, Aaron, Peter, Stephen, everyone else. I shall leave you. I'm going to cycle home. Remember, kids, be good to the environment. Cycle more. My father-in-law's trying to get me to buy a new car, and I said, no, why would I do that in London? Absolutely insane. I'll borrow his. Okay, thanks, everyone. Bye.